It's time for Eco Talk with host Betsy Rosenberg.
She'll be great. She's a very smart, capable person who knows exactly what took place and will lay out the facts. And that's what the American people want to see.
I had a dream the other night. Now, in my dream, our national bird had become the ostrich.
Welcome to Eco Talk, where you hear sound solutions for a healthier planet, or as I say, greening the red and blue states one show at a time. A great green gathering, West Coast Green, one of the first green building conferences of its kind. Lots of green luminaries there, and we're going to speak to them this hour. Kevin Danaher with Global Exchange will be with us. And right now, Eric Corey Fried, who's been working in the world of green architecture for some time. Welcome back to Eco Talk. You were on the show that airs locally, and now we're on nationally, daily, showing, I guess, like a lot of the trends around us, the green has arrived. Green has gone mainstream.
Thanks, Betsy. It sure has.
How exciting is this to see green builders and consumers and tradespeople under one roof? Very large one at that.
Well, it's quite unbelievable. My head's about to explode, I think. We have record attendance at the West Coast Green Show, which I think is indicative of the fact that people need this information, they want this information, and the world is indeed about to change. You know, for 30 years, we environmentalists were making a very impassioned case for the environment, that Mother Earth is dying and we need to do something. And for 30 years, everybody mostly ignored us. And what we've seen is that pioneers like Paul Hawken and natural capitalism have really taught us how to talk about the environment in a business sense. And now, on a regular basis, we talk to our clients about return on investment. And if you're going to spend any upfront cost difference on green building, we calculate how long it'll take to pay for itself. For most things, usually less than 5 years. Some things like solar, 5 to 7 years. So that's part of it. And also, if you think about it, there have been a number of tipping points that have occurred in the last 2 years. Most notably, George Bush himself admitted...
At least he was good for something.
Right. Admitted that we're addicted to oil. Even though he tried to retract it later.
And this did start before he said that. Let's not give him too much credit.
No. I think surprisingly, Hurricane Katrina opened up a lot of people's eyes about global warming. So if any good came from that, it was that. The Al Gore film, I've seen a profound change from people talking about that. Even people that haven't seen the film are now aware of it. Vanity Fair's April issue this year was the green issue, printed on, you know, oil-covered, non-recyclable paper, but still
Julia Roberts,
issue.
When did she get into the picture? But, you know, it got people's attention. That's what most of America reads.
It
Time Magazine did.
Did
a be very worried issue on global warming, and Newsweek did the greening of America in May. So we are seeing, I was talking about, is this a tipping point with someone, and they said, well, it's a tipping point in mainstream media, but as mainstream media covers, so goes the population.
Absolutely, and even Oprah Winfrey did a show on the environment. So to me, that's...
You're hitting all my favorites.
Right.
I say we can thank Katrina, Wilma, Rita, Oprah, Al.
Exactly.
And George, I guess we should add to
exactly.
that. So you're an organic architect.
Yes.
That sounds pretty eco-groovy. What is that?
Well, I called my company Organic Architect really in deference to Frank Lloyd Wright. And my mentors were all students of his. So I'm really the third generation of that. And for me, sustainability was always a very logical extension of that. It wasn't something to do because it was hip, because it certainly wasn't when I started. And it wasn't something you do out of guilt, but really you do it because it just makes logical sense. I mean, after all, what is the business case for filling a building with toxic materials? And what is the business case for building buildings that ignore the fact that the sun always rises in the east and always sets in the west? How can you really justify that type of effort, especially when buildings are the worst defenders of all in the environment? Buildings consume 40% of the world's energy and materials. So for me, it was always a very logical thing.
I understand you've wanted to be an architect since you were a young lad.
Yes.
When did you have your eco-epiphany and go to sustainable architecture?
When I was still in college, and I went to school on the East Coast, which is a mixed blessing, but all my professors were saying things like, you're wasting your talents, and nobody cares about the environment. And this was, of course, in the late 80s when energy was cheap and we were sealing up our buildings.
And we had already addressed the environmental problems. By the way, I started my one-minute segments, which was called Trash Talk at the time, back in 1997. A couple of people said to me, this is kind of a strange time to be doing this. I said, why is that? Well, didn't we hear about all the environmental stuff already? Like, didn't we already solve the problems? And then there's been a resurgence.
If you think about the development of any civilization, we've reached a unique point The Industrial Revolution wasn't named until 100 years after it occurred. I think the same thing is going to occur in this revolution. We don't have a name for it yet, and maybe in 100 years, 50 years, we'll have a name for it. But it's the point at which we've realized the effect of our actions. We realize that we must take responsibility for our actions. And I'm sure it occurs in every civilization. I'm sure the ancient Romans had some epiphany point right before their downfall.
The funny thing is, people tend to think environmentalists are sort of a gloom and doom crowd, and they're angry, activists. I see more excitement and genuine positive vibes and energy and hopefulness about the future when I go to green gatherings than I do out there in the rest of my...
I just gave a talk in Florida, and what was funny was that as well-received as the talk was, because they were very eager to hear it, none of them laughed at my jokes. I think they thought a talk in environmentalism or green building would be a very serious thing. And those who know me will quickly tell you that I don't really take much that seriously, and I joke about everything. And yet when I gave a talk at the West Coast Green Conference, the room just laughed at all my jokes. So it's not that they have a better sense of humor here in San Francisco. I just think that green is still perceived as this stodgy, perhaps stoic thing that we're not supposed to laugh.
Well, when it was about saving the spotted owls and the trees and the birds and the bees, as I say, that may be a little bit removed from the average person's, sphere of, connection. But when it's really our, on the line, which increasingly we're beginning to see that it is, then you get, the self-interest motivation, and you get people seeing that this is something that we've created, unknowingly perhaps, but we're here now, and so we do have the power to turn it around or not, or slow it down anyway.
Well, Christy Graham, who's the founder of West Coast Green, when we were doing the planning of it, she'd wanted to have a big gala Friday night. And when we said, well, will there be dancing, she paraphrased the quote saying, well, what's a revolution without dancing? So, in my mind, we should be having fun. It should be a very hopeful, fun, exuberant thing.
Okay, let's talk a little bit about green building itself, LEED standards. What's the status of that? That was the gold standard, platinum, silver.
LEED is the green rating system established by the U.S. Green Building Council. It is now all pervasive. I think it's hit a point of ubiquity. It's been adopted by over 80 municipalities around the world. It's literally become the standard by which we measure green buildings. So in that regard, it's been an amazing success. 27,000 people have become accredited in this green rating standard.
Will that continue to be the standard?
I don't see. The way it's designed has been great because it's designed to be open. It's designed to be democratic. Anyone who's a member of the U.S. Green Building Council can have a say in the evolution and shaping of the rating system. And they're at version 2.2. And I think when we see version 8, it'll really be something. And if you look at it, they've been, as all buildings have been raising in their greenness, we've been increasing the intensity of the standards. JFK said, a rising tide raises all boats, right? So I think that's what's happening now with LEED.
We are seeing a trend in among cities and states taking the lead, speaking of leads, because there's such a vacuum, in Washington. What are you seeing that excites you at the city and state level?
I'm seeing entire municipalities changing gears radically to focus on this notion of green building. What they've realized is that this is their home, and they have more of a say than they might have initially thought in what gets built in their home. So as developers come into their little hometown, they can say to these developers, we're not going to let you build anything unless you make it a green building. We're not going to let you build anything unless it's LEED silver. And the developers comply, because that's what developers do. They're used to jumping through hoops and complying with whatever restrictions that the cities impose.
We just have a couple of minutes left. What do you see as the biggest obstacles to really spreading green building so it really becomes the mainstream and not the alternative?
Well, for years a lot of architects had said, well, nobody's asking me for a green building. We'll do it as soon as a client comes in and asks for it. And I think the biggest obstacle is getting architects to realize that it's never too late to do the right thing and that they need to stop waiting to be asked to do the right thing. Clients come into them looking for professional responsibility. So they come in assuming the building will be built on time. They assume the building will be built on budget, and they assume the building will be built to code. And I think, too, there's an implied inherent contract in there that it's assumed that the building will be responsible.
Well, that comment reminds me of, are Americans voting for environmental candidates? And the answer has been pretty much up until maybe recently, we'll see in the next elections, not really, not enough. But that's because they haven't really connected the dots. I mean, if Americans, if consumers, if builders, if, homeowners really understood all the consequences, which we're learning about, I think they would. So that's where programs like EcoTalk. Here's a plug. Yes, shameless plug. But, you know, you got to connect the dots before people will demand,
this is a perfect venue for that.
Yeah. And that's when we're going to start seeing it. Consumers, homeowners, builders will start asking for it when they know that it's something that will affect them. And we're starting to see that. You're starting to see that.
Absolutely. And it's an exciting time to be alive.
We'll end on that positive note. Eric Corey Fried, thanks for joining us. We'll be back right after these messages.